Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of WHIM Radio. We've been away for a little while, but we are back with a new episode for you. I am Peter, and for this episode, two people are joining me. First, Jay is here. Jay, how are you doing tonight?
After that intro, I am just about as spicy as I could possibly be, Pete. Happy to be here.
Having trouble staying in your seat? You want to jump up and scream?
Oh, yep, yep. They gave me an entire seat, but the only place I'm at right now is the edge of. There you go.
Awesome. Also joining us is JJ. JJ, how are you doing?
2019, woo!
There we go.
That's
all right, so since the All-Star break, Detroit has played twice. And let me double-check my notes here. We won both times? That doesn't seem right, but that's what it says here. The first game was a 3-2 win over Toronto in Toronto, followed by a 2-0. Oh, wait, no, not – wait. No. That was in
– yeah, we were at home.
On.
That was yeah, like Kelly okay.
Yeah, for some reason when I looked at it on the NHL thing, I read it backwards anyway, because that's why as I was talking, I was like, wait a second, no, that was at home. Yeah, so anyway, we 3-2 over Toronto at home. And then the next night we played in Ottawa, and it was Detroit 2, Ottawa 0. But
suck it on,
unfortunately,
Ontario.
A downside. Yeah, we are doing awesome. So first we beat a team that we on paper we shouldn't beat, and then we beat a team that on paper we probably should beat. So kind of weird. But a downside of the win over the Leafs is that Dylan Larkin was injured and he didn't play against Ottawa. But fortunately, according to the latest news that we've heard so far, it seems like Dylan Larkin may be back as soon as today when you're listening to this against the Las Vegas. We tried to warn Carolina what would happen if they tried to have fun, Golden Knights. So that's where we are. So like I said, we've been away for a little while, but we are back. And we're ready to talk about what's been going on in Red Wings land. So let's see. So first of all on our list is basically finishing out the season. We have the trade deadline coming up on February 25th. So we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, what we want to see, you know, from now until, you know, around that time with the trade deadline, you know, from kind of like, you know, also the end of the season. And then what are we looking for beyond? Like, what are we looking for, you know, from next season and even after that, right? So there's been a lot of speculation on this front with some articles that have been in the news lately. So, JJ, I'm gonna throw it to you first. So what are you looking for? I guess let's kind of cut this into like shorter term and longer term. So let's talk about short term first, right? So what are you looking for, you know, trade deadline wise and the end of the season between now and the end of the season?
Yeah. At this point, I'm willing to watch the team trade basically everybody, understanding that, not the core, not the untouchable. You know, leave Larkin alone. Although I continue to be the guy for the right price, I'd sell anybody. But that's kind of a self-defeating thing because for the right price is obvious.
Right.
The price for Dylan Larkin would have to be extremely high and unreasonable for anybody who is not a Detroit fan for me to be like, oh yeah, that's the right price. So Gustav Nyquist, Jimmy Howard, Nick Jensen. If you get anybody to bite on, like, I don't know why anybody would trade for Trevor Daley at this point, or Nick Cronwell keeps coming up, and I do know why teams would trade for him, because I don't get the confusion about that. I mean, we once traded for Marek Zidlicky, or Zidlicky, and that was a decently similar kind of a player, but I'm also prepared to not trade anyone. I just want to see the team kind of continue what they've been doing in terms of, here, kids, this is your team. You continue to grow. I do want to see a little bit more. Like, I know that Ken Holland teased he expects Zadina to get some games in. Great. Enjoy your 9-game stint. We all know it's not going to be beyond that, because it would be incredibly stupid to burn that year and risk Zadina being eligible for the expansion draft because of it. You know, get Rasmussen up from Grand Rapids when he's healthy and get him in a few games. Start the defensive carousel, as you will. Like, I don't think they're going to be able to sell off any of their defensive veterans. So get Hronek some more time up. You know, give Sulak another look if you can. Like, I don't even know how Sulak is doing in Grand Rapids right now, but it just feels like I basically, if Trevor Daly doesn't play another game for the Red Wings this season, okay, I'm cool with that. If Nick Cronwall starts taking some breaks, yay. Maybe give Mike Green a day off. You know, just a personal day to hang out with his cats, Gary and Banana.
Yeah.
Or, you know, his children. Children, child? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Knowing all that stuff about him, other than his
cat name. Just real quick. Yeah. Just real quick, because you mentioned Sulak, I think I read that he's been scratched on and off lately. So maybe he's not doing as good as we hope down there.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Doesn't always mean. You know, I mean,
don't
yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Just see more guys, more youth, and more. Better positioning going into the off season and the draft. And honestly, what I'd like to see is for the team to like play really well and then just get unlucky as possibly can be. And it'll be obviously unlucky. So it's not like, we suck. We're never it doesn't like affect the culture. Just find ways to lose every game in completely stupid or maybe even like referee unfair ways. Like the entire fan base is totally infuriated with the NHL, just to keep the kids that are growing playing well, but also giving us good draft position.
Yeah. I mean, like that's one of the things that, and maybe it's a semantics thing. I don't know, but like a lot of times in the comments, like when people are talking about like, I don't want to tank because I don't want there to be a culture of losing. It's like, you know, like we said this before, like you can kind of have both things. You can have the team not do well in the standings and you can have the young players grow and develop a good culture together. You know, if they're losing because they're doing good things, they're making mistakes they're going to learn from, and you're trusting the kids more than the veterans, and again, they're going to make more mistakes. As long as they're learning from those mistakes, as long as it's not making the same exact mistake over and over again, that's not productive. You know, but there's a way that you can do this and have both things happen, and I think. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just me, but sometimes it seems like some people lose track of that, or they kind of look at it in a different way, that if you're like, you know, I really want to get a good draft position, that inevitably means that the team is going to go backwards in terms of development. So, Jay, I'm going to come to you in just a minute, but I just wanted to follow up a little bit on some of that, because I was looking at Cap Friendly just to refresh my memory on some of this stuff. And like, I continue to be concerned about the same thing I've been concerned about for probably the last couple of years. And, you know, going into the season, you know, we got these, you know, kind of quotes that made people think that maybe things were going to be, you know, we're going to start to change with playing younger players. And we did see, obviously, you know, Dennis Chalofsky has been up all season. Hronek was up for a while. I wish he was still up. Right? You know, I'd rather have him in Detroit than Grand Rapids. But I think, you know, kind of like what you said before with the trade deadline and looking at the defensemen, it's tough because, you know, I mean, Mike Green probably obviously has the most value of all of them, but he still has another year in his contract. I don't think he's going to be on the market. You know, DeKaiser and Erickson are going to still be here past, you know, Erickson for two more seasons and I'm sorry, one more season after this one, DeKaiser for three. And I don't really see anybody wanting to trade for them. Like you said before, Cronwall, maybe, but it based on quotes that we've seen recently, stories that we've seen recently, it seems pretty unlikely that the team's going to trade him. It seems like the most likely candidate is probably the one I'd least like to trade, which is Nick Jensen, because you know, yep. This is his last year under contract, and he's turned into a pretty good. I mean, I think. I don't feel uncomfortable saying he's probably a decent middle pairing defenseman on a good team. You know, I mean, maybe bottom pair, but I mean, I think he's pretty good. Like lately, like when we played Toronto, it was almost getting annoying how many Toronto Twitter people were commenting and how good Nick Jensen looks and how much they want him. You know, I think that's going to be an issue that the one that's the most likely to get traded is the one that's, we should be keeping and building, you know, and keeping on our team. But yeah, like the thing I'm worried about, continue to be concerned about is the thing we always keep talking about, the logjam with, you know, Joe Hicketts. You mentioned him before. This is his last year under contract. He's an RFA. And again, we're going to have a player going into an RFA year or, you know, going to the end of his contract. What do we have in him? We don't really know. He looked really good last year in a brief stint in the NHL. He looked not as good this year when he was up, but there was a, you know, the defensive blue line was largely rookies, and he doesn't seem to be doing as good as you would expect down in the AHL. So what do we have in him? Like, is he going to be a solid NHL defenseman? Is he not? Like, we don't really know. And then we have to make a decision on him. And, you know, looking at it, I mean, we're going to have a couple other people that are going to be in that position next year. Hronek, Saariarvi, actually Shulak after this year is going to be an RFA, kind of same thing. What do we got in him? So that's kind of what I'm worried about in terms of the defense. I think the forwards, I think we have a lot more room to maneuver, and I'm not as worried about that. So Jay, what are your thoughts, you know, short-term trade deadline, end of the season for Detroit?
Short-term, I would love to see basically what you guys have already said. I would love to see just more of the pipeline. And I don't know, it's weird to look back when Blash first started. My first immediate thought was, like, I'm okay with a rookie team and an experienced coach. I'm okay with a rookie coach with an experienced team, but I really am not the most excited about rookie team and rookie coach. So that's what we've been seeing for, you know, the last three, 4 years here, and seeing where it's gotten us in to now, I think it's time to just go plaid. I just want to go plaid right now. I want them to do like a wholesale change, like, you know, find whatever excuse, lower body injury you can give to the entire defensive crew. Just tell Erickson, listen, we're going to tell people that you've got like a sore hip flexor or something. But in actuality, we just need you to just like hang out in Grand Rapids for like a month. Like just it's a conditioning stint. You're working out, you're rehabbing an injury. Just do something. I would just love to see what a what's that famous phrase? Be unpredictable to the enemy. That way they can never figure out what you're trying to do. that's what I would like to see in the short term. In terms of trade deadline stuff, I am pleased by the play of Howard to get him to at least make probably somebody bite. I think Nyquist is obviously a prime candidate here. I guess I'm just very curious as to how badly we want to get burned when we trade these guys away. You know, it's going to be the second we give Nyquist to somebody else. It's like him, you know, like Superman finally getting that well-earned ray of sunshine, and then he's able to lift buildings again. So, I shudder at that point, but, I'm with you, JJ. I'm as far, you know, other than what's nailed to the ground. Like, let's go for it. Pump the tires, see what's what. I mean, Pete, well, as you were saying, like, everybody's like, hey, Jensen looks really good. And that's the point where I just wish everybody would be like, yeah, so for the low, low cost of Mitchell Marner, you can have him. And granted, yes, of course, that would never, ever happen because, you know, it's funny how the Leafs both get what they want, but then don't know what to do when they have what they wanted. But that's neither here nor there. Beyond that, I honestly just want this to be this whole thing where I know I'm like the resident. I just tie everything into a movie quote or a movie moment type person. But in Helm's Deep, when things are looking the worst, everybody just looks to the east and there's Gandalf with a bunch of Riders of Rohan and they charge in and are able to save everybody. That's kind of what I'm hoping an Yzerman thing looks like. So just I just want pure chaos until he shows up. And then everything after that, I'm down. If he cleans house, if he, you know, gives everybody basically like a tryout term and then, you know, yes, I am proceeding on the assumption that he does come back. I am a dreamer, but, there was a point in this season. It was the overtime win against the Maple Leafs. The one with Larkin scored that big goal, like that really big surprise game. We were like, oh, we just killed the Blue Giant for a game. That's, huh? What are we doing here? This is exciting, but what is this? What are we saying? So I had a friend approach me going like, hey, how about that win? And I was like, yes. How about it? What am I supposed to think here? It's a phenomenal game. Don't get me wrong. Isolated by itself, yeah, I'm excited. But how it fits into the grandiose scheme as a whole, we should be putting forth our baseline good effort. Nothing above that. I just want competitive losses. That's all we need. I don't need, you know, I know everybody's so scared about those 7-1, 5-0. Those are obviously the blowouts that everybody's scared was going to happen. But once again, I think we're racking up the most one goal games again. I think we had like top three like last season. Like it was pretty high up there and we're already up there again. So these exciting games where it's like, okay, if only we had that one shot or one guy just like took the onus and shot the puck instead of deferring to somebody else. And maybe we tie it and go to and lose in overtime, but at least we get a point. You know, those are, I am totally fine with those rather than the, all right, we're now reaching the midway point of the first half and it's a football game here against, you know, Minnesota or Nashville and whatnot. So yeah, short term, I want, short-term deadline, I want chaos. If that's trade everybody, call everybody up, just see what happens.
I think my favorite part is I'm watching these games and I get to, like, there has been actual real excitement. Like, I don't remember a game last season where, like, a guy scored a goal, and I was, like, really like, oh, shit, yeah, I love it. I've been scaring my dog and my family as much as I previously did. And I've done that several times this season, and I don't feel guilty about that at all. Like, I do want the competitive losses, like Jay just said, but I go into every game, like, wanting to, like, every single individual game, I want to see the Red Wings win, and they do win, and I don't feel bad about it. And they lose, I'm like, I don't have to feel bad about this either. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. And if we get to the end and the Red Wings get, I don't know, stupidly hot and end up missing the playoffs by a couple of points, I'll look back and like, well, that sucks. But I'm not going to be – you're not going to be able to pinpoint a single game where I'm going to be like, boy, I wish they'd have lost that one. Nah, that's just not how I fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. Let's see. Yeah. So, oh yeah. Yeah. Fun story. Like I started to respond to that and realized I had turned my mic off because Bowie was barking for something. I don't know why, but, so yeah. So, okay. So that's the short term. And obviously, you know, the team's got to think about next year and beyond. So I was taking a look and especially, I mean, on the defensive side, it's going to be tough because right now,
under contract for next year, we have Green, Danny DeKeyser, Jonathan Erickson, Dennis Shalovsky, right? So, you know, assuming nothing, just saying nothing else changes, then there are, you know, two more spots in the top six. You know, we have players in the minors that probably should be competing for those spots. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. So let's see. So I went to JJ first last time. So Jay, I'm going to come to you. And, you know, what are you looking for the Red Wings, you know, for what you think could be feasible for the Red Wings to do going into next season and maybe even a little bit beyond that?
I would say my biggest want, and again, this is just me, I want a mascot. That's what I want. Do you guys realize how painful it was to see 29 other teams get to sit on the stairs in San Jose, and everybody's there, and the Rangers and the Red Wings are part of this exclusive club of just, they just don't mess with having a mascot. And, you know, maybe for a time, yeah, you're right, we didn't really need one. The winning hockey, that was the mascot. And then we didn't really need like a physical mascot because we had Al. But, you know, now that we're in this kind of reinvention, rebuilding, looking where we want to be, trying to aspire to be the top dogs that are currently in the league right now, I think now is the great, just the best time to just workshop something, figure it out. And the answer is already there. I think you just need to take something in the vein of Gritty and kind of mix in a little Davy Jones from Pirates of the Caribbean and just like make Al just this giant animated octopus who's got four limbs operating his arms and legs, and then the other four limbs are just cool little goatee beard thing. There's something there. I think that there's actually something there, and I'm actually currently trying to figure out a way to draw it because the image is in my head. It's just really hard to get in and out. But yes, I for the most part, I would love a mascot. But more to your question, Peter, the thing I really, really want is a goaltender. Now I understand that we do have some good goalie prospects in the line here, but if there is something that I wish that, you know, if I'm going to look at the Red Wings as a starship enterprise, you're able to divert power to a certain function of the ship to just really get something done. I would route all resources at my disposal to just finding two top tier by whatever means necessary goaltenders and just figure it out. I just struggle to see all these times where, oh, Lundqvist with another amazing goal, Rene, you know, Hellebuck, you know, just, I like Jimmy Howard. I've liked Jimmy Howard for a long time, but I think while everybody's been so concerned about defense on this team, we keep forgetting about the number one defense on the team, which is the goaltender. And I want a maniac. I want somebody that's not going to be, you know, just straight laced, you know, hey, I'm gonna, you know, I stick to my system. No, I think, you know, the idiom of, I don't even know if idiom is the right word to describe this. The axiom, the everyday concept that everybody's already attached to a goalie is that you have to have screws loose to be a goalie. Right. And I'm looking for just a stud goaltender. So I have no problem with them putting their efforts and their picks towards, you know, some defense and some decent offense. And then, you know, obviously we'll, you know, free agency is a different beast altogether. But if there was one thing I wish that we could just reorient ourselves and just rededicate, it would be to between the pipes. Cause I just feel like that's the one magic wild card piece. And I thought we had it in Mrazek. I honestly did. Cause one of my favorite moments from him was there was a game where like we won like 3-2 and he was just like, it was one of his very first stand on top of your head moments where it was like, oh, I think this could be a thing. And they were talking to him afterward and he was like, yeah, that was fun. And I'm like, that was fun for you? You look like you pulled every physical ligament in your body to make the saves to secure that win. How can that be fun? I'm expecting you to be exhausted right now. You should be pissed off. He's like, no, it's fun. So that's I'm basically looking for Martin Riggs in goaltender form. Do you? I am just imagining somebody with a Belfour-ish mullet and a guy just that does random Sudoku puzzles and binges way too much West Wing. Like, just this kooky dude. And he's just really stellar in that. So that's my draft four-line want prediction.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I was going to say,
Yeah.
I got three real quick responses. first word nerd, axiom does work, but I think maxim is the word you're looking for in terms of the statement about having to have screws.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree about the mascot thing because of Gritty. I think we need to get let Gritty run his course before we try to do that. Otherwise, it's gonna you might as well name our new guy our new mascot Poochie if you're gonna try it within the next year or so. And third, I also miss Dominic Hasek. You can admit it. That's I agree there because he was the gold standard for crazy, nutty, kooky he's in his crease eating mayonnaise. It just that's what you would expect. Like, oh, it's Dominic Hasek. Of course. That's what I'm and I do. I think that we all in Mrazek and then that all fell apart and now screw that guy. But yeah, I do want that too. Yeah. So go ahead.
Yeah, it's really tough because if you think Jay mentioned Henrik Lundqvist. You know, he's one of only a handful of goalies since I've been watching hockey for decades who's just been consistently in that upper echelon. You know, for a long time, for a while, everybody's like, oh, Carey Price is going to be amazing. And he was, but, he's just been kind of average this year. Bobrovsky isn't anywhere close to what he's been in the past. And so for me, that's always the tough thing with goalies is it's really hard because if you sign a goalie to a long-term contract, even if when you sign them, they are, let's say in the top, five goalies in the league, it's far from a guarantee that they're going to be there for, even the majority of their contract, which is really tough. But I mean, obviously, yes, I would definitely I would be all aboard having a goalie that is number one, very effective, and number two, very interesting to follow. So JJ, what else are you looking for beyond this year in terms of the roster?
Man, I'm gonna commit fan blasphemy based on what I've been reading from everybody else, but the Ken Holland talk about wanting to make a run at the playoffs next year. Does not bother, surprise, or dishearten me, really. I don't want to see the Red Wings go all in free agency on an $11 million guy that isn't going to work out. But honestly, I do want to see, perfect world, the Red Wings win this draft lottery or end up with a really fantastic kid and next year really are looking at a team that is finally at least that one piece away. Cause I don't think that we are one piece away right now, but I think that by the end of next season, I really would like to believe that we are, and that's something that can be filled out. Maybe even via free agency while we still have these kids on cheaper deals. I like where we're potentially positioned for in this rebuild cycle in order to get moving forward to the next portion of the cycle, which is getting the kids the playoff experience and teaching them, how much more it's going to take to win. Not just at the regulars, not just enough games to make the playoffs, but enough games to, what it's going to take to even make noise in the playoffs. Because I do not think that you're going to go from, zero to the conference finals in one season unless it's a flash in the pan, in which case I don't want to see that either. I don't want false hope either. So, specific player wise, like I do want them to avoid expensive free agents. Like I don't want them to have to give out the long deals. Avoid another Franz Nielsen, and that's. It sucks because I really hate like having a hate on the guy, but like I just don't like his contract. and in retrospect, like I just kind of wish it hadn't happened. But he's such a super likable guy that we don't need two of him though. And
yeah,
I don't know. Like I guess if Carlson like could be had for a good amount, like not like. Stupid cheap. If he comes for $4 million, I'd take him. Like maybe you consider it. That's a huge risk because he is not the one missing piece. And like I said, we are not one missing piece away anyway. And you're taking a huge gamble on that. But I don't know. Like the eternal optimist in me would like to think that it's possible that we could have a really exciting team going into the next season.
Yeah, I think it's probably more likely that the team takes that step maybe two seasons from now, but at the same time I don't think that like it doesn't make sense that they could next year depending on what happens. There's an article on NHL.com where they talked to Ken Holland and he had a lot of quotes, and to be honest, a lot of them made sense. They made more sense than some of the quotes that we've been kind of seeing, trickle out from the team about what they're going to do. And there's always the caveat that you can't believe everything that they say. Just for the simple reason that if they are trying to, are going to have to negotiate with other teams, like let's say if they're trying to make trades, they're not going to put all their cards on the table and just be like, oh yeah, we really want to trade this guy. We really don't want to trade this guy. So they're not going to make these, they're not going to tell you exactly what they're thinking. They're always going to, try to be a little bit coy about it, which makes sense. I think some of the quotes he has are interesting. We talked about the Zadina thing before about he's they're planning on bringing him up a little bit later. And I think it was interesting because like he talks about it's a section where it says on the next wave of young players, right? And so he's talking about for next year, he's talking about Hronek, Zadina, Svechnikov, which I feel totally bad when I was thinking about the team today to get ready for this. I completely forgot that Svechnikov exists, which I feel terrible for because I like him, but he's just he's been out of mind for so long, and it's obviously if he can live up to the potential that he has, then yeah, he's going to be a nice piece, I think. But then he also says, I think we got some players that are just a step below, and then he says like he doesn't mean that they're not going to be good players. He just, in his opinion, he thinks that they're not going to be ready for next year, but maybe the season after, two years from now. And he includes Joe Valeno in there. He includes Jared McIsaac, Gustav Lindstrom, who's playing in the Swedish league, top four. He's playing a top four position over there. And then, like I said before, there's other players too. You had mentioned, JJ, you had mentioned Šulák. The one who always seems to be left out is Saarijärvi. And I don't want to, make this sound hyperbolic. I don't want to be too dramatic about this, but I really think that, based on what I know about Saarijärvi and what a lot of people who seem to know what they're talking about have said about his potential, I'm really worried that we're going to end up in the same position that we're going to be with Joe Hickett's this offseason, where it's going to be time to make a decision on him and we're not going to have enough information to make a good informed decision. Hopefully I'm wrong about that, but I don't see I never see his name mentioned. He's never in the list of people that they're talking about. Maybe sometimes, but pretty rarely. And then he also makes the point that, whoever we draft in the first round, especially if it's going to be, top two, top three. A lot of the times those players come right into the NHL, but it's not unheard of, like we saw with Zadina, who was going into the draft was, projected to be third. And you know, he didn't come right into the NHL, which is, again, not bad. But yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to be really interested to see what Joe Valeno looks like next year in training camp, because he's continuing to destroy the Q this year. His production has trailed off a little bit, but I mean, he's still putting up ridiculous numbers, which of course doesn't always translate. Obviously had a very disappointing World Junior Championships, didn't really get to play very much. And so it's going to be interesting to see how he rebounds from that, because he looked really good this year in preseason and training camp. So I think he might end up being ready for next year, but maybe not. So no matter what, there's lots of decisions. One of the things that I don't think we specifically talked about this. I know we mentioned him, is the Cronwall situation with him being close. He's like 70 something games away, but being relatively close to being one of only a handful of players who played 1,000 games for Detroit, which obviously, you know, considering all he's done for the organization, would be great. But at the same time, it's going to depend, you know, it depends on a lot of things. It would mean signing him again next year, and that would mean taking up another roster spot, assuming we don't move somebody else out. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Who knows how much of this is smoke and mirrors? Who knows how much of this is actually going to happen? So in a minute, we're going to move on to a story from outside the Red Wings that could definitely have some really big impact in, maybe the Red Wings being able to acquire another piece in the near future that might not have been possible before. But before I do that, is there anything you guys wanted to talk about specifically with the Red Wings that we didn't talk about?
Nah. I wanted to make a joke. You're good, Joey. Sorry, Arby's really easy to overlook because he's short, but we got Joe Hickett. No, he's even shorter than he is. So.
The only thing I wanted to add was every time you guys say the and then insert a player name and situation right after, I just immediately replay the Bonnie situation in my head, and it's very fun. So if you guys ever get down on talking about whether or not hockey teams can just stop screwing around and be better, just replay the Bonnie situation in your head. It's a lot of fun.
There we go. All right. So the development that I had mentioned before is Austin Matthews has signed a new contract, and I had all the details up. I don't know what I did with them, but I will pull them up right now. This is really interesting, because there was I did see a quote from him where he said that they had talked about anywhere from 3 years to 8 years. That's a pretty wide range. He ended up signing for 5 years, and the average annual value of the contract is just over $11.5 million, which is 14.6% of the current salary cap. Right. Connor McDavid is at 16.67% of the salary cap, but Jack Eichel is 13.3%. Right. So Matthews definitely came out better here than Eichel did. And the thing that a lot of people are really interested in, well, actually, there's a couple things. One of the big things that people are interested in is that he's the first player I can think of in a while to be in that situation where he's like a top player who, you know, now has the ability to sign a long-term contract, who didn't sign for 7 or 8 years. It seems like maybe I'm not thinking of somebody, but it seems like the standard for a while has been that these players sign a max deal. So he was able to, he only gave up 1 year of unrestricted free agency. So when this contract expires, he's going to be 26. Which means he's going to be in the market for another big contract. I know, Jay, you and I, when we talked to Chris Watkins, he's always talking about, the giant difference between the NHL and the NBA
in that the NBA, you have their top players are taking like 1 year deals or 2 year deals, you know, so that next year they can get even more money. And obviously, especially in hockey, where the risk of injury is greater, you're losing out on the knowledge that if you get hurt, you know, you have this contract, as opposed to if you take a 1 year deal and then you get hurt and now who knows, you might have given up tens of millions of dollars that you could have had otherwise. And so it's going to be interesting to see if this changes the game. And then the other thing, and this always makes me laugh because I know that Gary Bettman, I forget if he's like specifically told teams this or if it's kind of just been like passed through the grapevine, that he really hates it when these players take when they structure their contracts so that it's the majority, in this case, 93% of Austin Matthews' salary is going to be paid in signing bonus. So I guess it's not technically salary. It's a signing bonus for 93% of it, right? So that means that if there's a lockout, he is going to get the vast majority of his money, whereas other players who don't have these giant signing bonuses are not. So that if it makes Gary Bettman angry, it makes me happy, mostly. But so Jay, how do you think this is going to affect the, you know, just kind of the general salary situation? But then, you know, does it seem like this might change the ability of the Red Wings to maybe target a young player that they wouldn't have otherwise been able to?
Let me lead off by saying that the whole idea that this is now becoming a situation where it gets to be a framing of that tweet where it's like, Gary Bettman says, hey, we're going to do this is how we're going to do, we want you guys to be proactive and get maximize your value. And then it's in parenthetical, Austin Matthews gets 93%. And then it says, no, not like that. So I think that there's obviously the stick that's in Gary Bettman's craw is that if he's going to lock out, sorry, when he's going to lock out, he wants to obviously dictate the terms and the rate in which events happen. And if, I don't know, granted, I know everybody doesn't have that contract going into whatever the next negotiations are supposed to be. But, you know, I think that sets a precedent for, listen, if the league is going to continue to dangle these work disputes over the players' heads, I mean, it's absolutely prudent of them to figure out ways in order to take care of themselves and maintain their value in ways that the league obviously isn't in the best interest of trying to get. So, absolutely, I think this is a phenomenal deal to exist now. As you said in our wonderful mailbag, it is not team friendly, but I think that there's something to be said for how, yeah, absolutely, it can change the landscape a little bit here. And I would, a long time ago, my dad came up with one of his favorite repeatable sports theories is that every player should just sign 1 year deals, you know, just every season. Like, think about how much fun that would be, right? Everybody starts from scratch, and then think of it not as, you know, free agency day. Think of it as free agency week. You know, every day, you know, the Red Wings announced 10 signings, you know, like just an absolute madhouse. But it'd be entertaining, but you're also able to give, you know, sometimes the players obviously are able to get their worth more if they're able to, I don't know, it's so tough to see what your value is, especially with how the market is dictating. Look at what's happening with baseball right now. Two of the top players in the game are still unsigned because of money issues and whatnot. So I'm so excited that maybe hockey can actually have a ripple effect somehow to, like, actually, you know, try and find value, but also, you know, screw up the status quo. I want this to be a deal that looks around and that the Red Wings, but also Arizona, Vancouver, Florida, you know, Ottawa to an extent, that maybe that, you know, hey, maybe they have a chance to still kind of be in the thick of things. But I think at the end of the day, I think we're all misreading the obvious question here is Matthews is – I think Matthews did what maybe McDavid should have, which was, I will sign this deal. I will give you your chance. And if you blow it, I will be out of here like Wiley freaking Coyote. You will only be able to talk to the dust cloud of where I was once standing once this deal is done and you guys haven't figured it out. So I think Matthews is – this has to be a win for him on so many levels. And I hope he's called all of his friends and I hope everybody watches to try and do something similar.
So JJ, I know when McDavid signed his contract, I know we talked about our shared opinion that he should have tried to get as much money as possible. So what are your thoughts on this Matthews contract? And then, you know, also, kind of the ripple effect that it could have going forward. It seems like it's going to have.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, the Matthews contract is – like, I don't think that there's anybody who earnestly believes, like, he's not worth that deal. Like, that is a – deal that he absolutely ought to live up to, and it makes a lot of sense. And it's basically – market value, which is really weird for a guy who signs an RFA deal. But I think the more you look at it, the more it kind of vastly highlights like where the difference is between the really like elite outliers and the rest of like the kid schlubs and where their ability to really put the screws to teams are, because, you know, Athanasiou held out and he ended up getting it was still a pretty team-friendly deal. And then William Nylander held out and he ended up with a deal that wasn't quite as team-friendly, but there wasn't, like, that entire time he was offer sheet eligible and that didn't happen. Now, after Matthews, there is going to be the Mitch Marner offer sheet danger, but that's only really because of Matthews. Like, and the Leafs were not in a position where they could have allowed Austin Matthews to hold out. He absolutely would have gotten an offer sheet. But that is basically the level of player, and there are so few of them that come along where he truly has that kind of leverage. And it is kind of a weird situation with Toronto based on the timing of this, where it kind of like it's going to trickle down to give Mitch Marner more leverage than he would have. But on outside teams, like, I don't know. I'm not convinced that this is the tip of the spear in terms of really good kids being able to get these kind of I'm not going to have to give up AAV, or you're not going to get to buy extra UFA years from that because that's how good I am. I think that Matthews is exceptional, and that's essentially why that came down. So I'm not expecting things to change too much, but I am really, really hoping that that Marner does end up getting an offer sheet. Just because I just want to see teams go to war. Like, I want to see GMs like really, really starting to hold grudges against one another and doing things that, like, I want moves like that to be like, is that a petty move or is that a hockey move? Like, did Dubas do that because he's upset with the guy, or is like he's actually trying to make his team better, or is he trying to make the other team worse? Just because that's more entertaining.
Yeah.
Can I just say that I'm really excited?
Yeah.
JJ, I'm really excited because you actually already gave the pun headline for what happens when he leaves. Deciphering the after Matthews. Oh, genius.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
See, I'm really upset that in retrospect that Connor McDavid signed for so long, because I'm going to have to remember my headline for when he finally leaves Edmonton, which is going to be McJesus walks. So got to wait for that. That's going to, I guarantee you, I will forget it by the time it happens, but
Yeah, so I was going to mention this before, but one of the fun things, and by fun, I mean something that can both take up your time and also alter your mental state, things that, fans of teams who are not in playoff contention can do is go to a little website called Tankathon, and they can simulate the draft lottery. And this is, like I said, this can be both fun, infuriating, and kind of ruin your day. But I did this before the episode, and I'll give you the good news first. The good news is that in the simulation I did, the Detroit Red Wings went up two spots to pick second overall, which is awesome, obviously. The bad news is that first overall was the Anaheim Ducks who jumped up four spots. So if that happened in real life, imagine how infuriating that would be, like to get kind of like the 1-2 punch of like, hey, we're picking second. Oh, they're picking first. God damn it. but yeah, no, it would be hilarious because if that were to happen, obviously based on the standings as of right now, that pick that Colorado has from Ottawa would drop from first all the way down to fourth, which I think would be very funny. But yeah, so draft lottery is pretty, it's a cruel mistress, I think we can say, because the chances of, you know, depending on where they finish, the chances of Detroit falling are greater than the chances of Detroit rising, which is not great. Let's see. Oh yeah, so here before we go to the segment is listed as extra rant time, which I'm really interested to see what's going to happen there. we can talk a little bit about the playoff picture. We can talk a little bit about what the standings are looking right now. You know, what teams we think are going to hold on to maybe those final spots. Which teams we think are going to fall. So I'll take this first. In the East right now, the teams that are the closest that are on the outside looking in, we have Buffalo and Carolina, who are both 3 points out of a wild card spot. Then we have Philadelphia and the Rangers are 7 points and 9 points respectively. And of course they could make up that ground, but for me, I'm just going to say that I think Buffalo and Carolina are the teams that could jump back in. I don't know about you. I'm rooting for Carolina. I am rooting for Carolina as a sometimes contrarian. The more angry that the hockey men get about the Carolina's goal, the win celebration, the storm surge, that gives me life. And I would just like to see that continue into the playoffs. I would really like to see what happens if they win a playoff series, because that's going to be fantastic. But then taking a quick look at the West, let's see, St. Louis. And actually, yeah, the West is crazy. Okay, so Vancouver right now sits in the second wild card spot with 54 points. The last place team in the West, Los Angeles, is 6 points out. And then you going up, you have Anaheim, Chicago, Edmonton, and Arizona are all 3 points out. Colorado is 2 points out, and St. Louis is 1 point out. Dear God. I honestly don't even know what I want here, because it's hard for me to say I want Colorado. It's hard for me to say I want St. Louis. I guess I kind of want Arizona to make the playoffs, kind of like the same reason with Carolina. I think that would be fun. I think that would be interesting. So not saying it's going to happen, but that's what I'm hoping for. JJ, let's go to you next. Like, what are you thinking as the playoff picture kind of starts to shape up here?
I'm looking at the standings right now, and I'm kind of, like, not necessarily amazed, but it's funny to see, like, literally every single playoff team in the Eastern Conference, as of right now, has a positive goal differential, and every non-playoff team has a negative one, and that's just funny. And in the West, it's basically the same way, except the wild cards. There actually aren't enough positive differential teams in the West to make up for that. Colorado is currently at a zero, and they're out of the playoffs, whereas Minnesota and Vancouver both have negative goal differentials and are in the wild card standings. But that's funny to me. I think it's funny that you were talking about, you know, Anaheim jumping us in the – the draft lottery thing, and if they keep going the way they're going, they might not need to rely on luck ahead of us. And they've lost five in a row. Like, man, Randy Carlyle sucks. But I really enjoy it. I really enjoy it, and I'm suffering. In terms of the Western Conference, I think if things ended today, I'm totally okay with the way the standings go. Like, I kind of don't care if St. Louis makes the playoffs. You know, you could drop – I would actually rather drop Minnesota out of there than Vancouver, just because I don't like Minnesota hockey fans. I don't really like Vancouver hockey fans either, but it's funnier to watch the Wild fans suffer. I do not want Colorado to make the playoffs. Screw that team forever. Salt the earth. Arizona, I would be okay if Arizona made the playoffs too. It's just that raises the possibility or the chances that, like, that's going to get credited to Jacob Chychrun, and I hate that guy's name. I hate his face. I hate his history. I root against him and only him. I do not want Edmonton to make the playoffs. I want Chicago to get really close to playoffs so that they don't end up winning the Hughes lottery, because if that happens, I may actually take a year off from hockey, to be totally honest with you. Los Angeles climbing out of the basement to make the playoffs would crack me the hell up too. So let's go nuts in the West, as long as the teams that I hate end up with bad things happening to them. And in the East, really the only thing I'm rooting for there outside of, like, what's already, like, I totally agree. I want Carolina in the playoffs. I want Toronto and the Islanders to meet in the playoffs at some point. I don't care which round it is. And I want Ottawa to get really, really close to the playoffs, or even potentially go hot enough to make the playoffs, which isn't going to happen. They're 18 points out right now. I just don't want that. I don't want that first round pick going to Colorado being a good one. So, screw them.
Yeah. No, it's hard to argue with any of that. So, awesome. So, Jay, what are you thinking? What are you looking at?
I'm glad that we're all in agreement that Carolina in the playoffs has become now a moral imperative. We must protect them at all costs. it's the classic Palpatine meme. Good. Let the storm surge flow through you. So I just want more of it. I forget who said it. I forget the tweet, but they're saying, like, you know, yeah, you laugh now, but it's going to be funny when the Hurricanes clap you off the ice after a first round playoff series win. And I'm like, oh my God. Just that gif of the white suburban mom looking out the window, just getting increasingly more pissed and then tearing off the drapes. if we could just have that happen in real life, but in the form of a GM, like, everybody's talking about, like, oh, at the All-Star game, we have these new innovations of different feeds showing player tracking data. I need a GM tracking data during the course of a playoff series. It's like, oh, what's this? It's showing Dubas in the bathroom right now. What's going on in there? Oh, he's throwing up. Oh, that's right. Okay. That's great. I want Carolina to make things happen. And I think they can do it. I think, given where they're at right now, that's just okay. The disparity between the Eastern and the Western Conference, I know our rate of play is in no way guaranteed with our team right now. But you look at the situation, it's like, why did we leave? Were 10 o'clock games really that bad? Did we really? Okay. All right. Fine. Looking at where this is at, four teams are tied with only being 3 points out of catching the Canucks, and it's less than 60 points is just keeping you in the race right now, and that's it's bonkers. So whatever's happening in the West, it's unlawful. It's unsettling, And I just don't know what to believe. And it's so weird because these are teams with some talent. Isn't like, I know like teams suck, but like they have some talent. And so if you have some talent and they're in that position, you'd think that one of the guys would just be like, oh, let me just take a look at the standings. Oh, okay. So you just need to go on like little three game streaks here. And we're right back in this thing, but nobody wants to do that. No, everybody's just stuck in neutral. It's hilarious. As far as like the East goes, I'm enjoying everything that's happening for Tampa, because I think if Tampa wins the cup, that hastens Eisman's departure all the more. So, go Tampa, win that cup. It's like winning the cup was like this weird soul pact that Eisman signed when he went down there. It's like, hey, until they win the cup, you're stuck here. So maybe he's like kind of preparing for on the inevitable here. I think there's something really awesome. JJ, I'm right there with you. I want a Leafs Islanders matchup so very badly. I think that would be just tremendous fun, right? And that, again, that's where my GM tracker simul feed on the NBC Sports app. That would just come in tremendous handy. I don't know. I think it's safe to say we have a different cup winner this year, right? Like Washington is just kind of bleh right now. I mean, yeah, they're second in their division and they're producing, but like I don't know. Something is tugging at my precognitive gut saying that we are going to see either a first or a very seldom winner this year. And I'm just excited as to how we're going to get there. So if that's a Tampa Bay, Sharks final, if that's a Flames Canadiens final, I don't care. I think it's going to be fun.
Man, today Nashville traded for Cody McLeod, who Korsica has as the worst ranked skater in the entire NHL. So you never know, that could be the trade that puts Nashville over the top. but yeah, as you were talking, I realized what I want to see if and when Carolina wins a first round playoff series is I want to see them, because you said, you know, you want to see them clap you off the ice. I want to see them do a full run through of the musical Stomp, right? That's what I want to see. Garbage cans playing the drums. I want to see that.
I watch the whole thing. Arranged in a tunnel, yeah. like a wedding ceremony, just like clapping, like, yeah. and make sure it's on an old arena where you have to exit on the opposite end of the ice. So you grab your water, you're grabbing your helmet, you're grabbing your gloves from the bench, and you're skating. And there's Justin Williams, two trash cans and tops in hand, like cymbals, just going like, "Thank you, nice try."
That would be fantastic.
Coming up.
Oh boy! All right, so So, JJ, you put in the rundown extra rant time, and you said, rest assured, I'll probably be ranting at some point. So, I don't know if you have something saved up. I don't know what's going on with this segment, but so what do you want to do for this one?
Man, I did. I had something, and then I kind of spent more time realizing that I shouldn't be, like, doing it. And this is also weird because I've got the two fellows from For Sure on, and basically what I want to take this time to say is go listen to the latest episode and what Cat Silverman has to say about the Pierre McGuire situation. And that's all I want to say about it, because essentially what I would be doing in this rant would be a guy repeating what a woman has already said, and then like suddenly magically like, oh, of course, now we realize what has been going on. Now I get it, because it had to come from a guy's mouth, and that's fucking stupid. So go listen to what Kat Silverman said. She hit the nail directly on the head in regards to how that situation played out, why it was as bad as it was, even if McGuire was not malicious in his intent with what happened. And if you don't get it from there, then you're just fooling yourself. So just go listen to that, and I'm done.
Yeah. So I looked it up because I wasn't sure if that was going to come up maybe in like a reader question or something. So I looked it up, and if you go to the latest episode, it's right around the 36-minute mark. I mean, the whole interview with her is really good. But yeah, if for some reason, if you don't have a lot of time, you just want to jump right to that, I think it's right around the 36-minute mark of that. Let's see, Jay, do you have any rants in you before we get to reader questions?
I would say my mini rant is seeing there was a jersey toss. I'm sure you guys saw this in Edmonton. I think was it yesterday, day before? Okay, jersey toss. Okay. Need I remind you, the fans, that in no way is that act or display supposed to mean more than you already paid the money for that. You already paid your way into the cult. And by throwing your club paid for sweater onto the ice. Okay. So like, yes, that's your, okay. You're, I don't know. I guess I'm just trying to figure out how to rank that in the pantheon of fan protests, because other fans burn jerseys, cut them up, tear them up, do something. I feel like, I don't know, do you think it's time that maybe fans have their own players association type group where they just like, yeah, the NHLPA comes out every year like, hey, these are the rules that have been changed and these are the things that are up for proposal that will be implemented. But like, wouldn't it be nice if there was just like a follow-up, kind of like in a response to the State of the Union type address from like the fan players association, like the fan union, goes going like, hey, so we all got together and we decided that if you guys suck this year, we're only going to throw water. We're not going to throw beer this year. We're just going to throw water. So I guess in the scheme of things, the point I'm trying to make is that I think there are far more creative and fun ways to notify your team of your disdain and your dissatisfaction with the product that's on the ice. One of the options being don't go. Don't go to the games. That's usually a pretty good one. Rant about it on Twitter, write your newspaper. There's literally fundamental things that you could be doing other than throwing what I assume is a very valuable layer of warmth. You're in Edmonton. Why are you throwing valuable clothes? I mean, even if those are the replica jerseys that you're throwing on the ice there, it's that temperate technology that's built into the replicas now too. That stuff keeps you warm. Why are you're hurting yourself more is what I'm getting at. So I understand you're going through it a bit, Edmonton. I really do. It sucks to have the best player ever and just nothing happening. It does. I can identify with that. I think there's more things you could be doing with your time. So that's my rant.
Yeah. I don't really have a rant, but I did want to put something in this, into here because, first of all, we have time because we don't have a ton of reader questions this episode, but we don't have a positivity corner, and there's something that I wanted to share that I think is kind of a good cross between a rant and a positivity corner, is that one of my favorite things that I've seen on Twitter in quite a while, both because of the idea, the execution, or I guess all because the idea, the execution, and then the response to it, has been Evolving Wild is doing a bracket of the 98 to 2005 post grunge new metal hard rock best of the worst Twitter poll. So for example, you got reading down, you have and this is not in the actual order. You have Korn, Saliva, Three Doors Down, Hoobastank, Evanescence, Drowning Pool, POD, Disturbed, Papa Roach, Nickelback, Limp Bizkit, Puddle of Mud, Creed, Kid Rock, Godsmack, and Stained. So basically, it's like the best of the worst. And I think this has just been really funny, and especially because today is the semifinals, and we have the 1-4 matchup between the 1 seed of Korn and the 4 seed of Evanescence. And Evanescence is right now is up 51% to 49, and people are losing their mind, which I think is hilarious. Because like in that whole group, I think there's maybe a handful of songs that I'm like, yeah, that's pretty cool. In the other bracket, Papa Roach is beating Creed. I think that's definitely going to be one of those like whoever wins, we all lose situations. But right now I'm pulling for Evanescence to win just because it seems to make people the most upset. And I've discovered that even though I don't really do it myself anymore, I do sometimes take joy in people being angry on the internet at something. Although it is a very rare occasion. And this is definitely making me very happy, and it's something that people are ranting about, so I think it kind of ties both of those together. All right, so the last segment we have for today is reader questions. So as always, we're going to throw to JJ to MC those. All right, so let's see what we got.
Excellent. All right, so we'll start off with a really easy one. T Jet Ski asks, since you used the tires photo, what are your predictions for the 2019 F1 season?
Do you guys I will watch none of it.
2019 F1 season. Okay. Jay?
I don't care. Like, I don't mean that to be a jerk. Like, if people like it, that's awesome. It's just, it's not for me.
Well, I'm actually really glad they asked this because, you know, I've been really concerned about how competitive Red Bull is going to be having signed with Honda. But I'm pretty sure that's going to settle itself out. I'm actually really excited about the fact that they're looking at doing more overtaking in F1 this year. I guess there's this thing called the Blade Runner prediction about having hover cars for F1. So I'm pretty excited to see what that technology could do for the sport. I know I mean I'm already an F1 maniac, so this is actually phenomenal news. But for my money, I would say the most thing that's concerning me about this F1 season is if Fernando Alonso can win with McLaren for the Indy 500. I think he's, obviously got a tough field to move up through, but you know, he's had strong showings in the last couple of years. So it's I think it's important for him to obviously start out of the gate strong. And I can definitely see him there holding the cup in victory lane. So those are my thoughts.
All right, and me being a resident of Tornado Alley, I'm rooting against the F1s, even though they are the weakest category. definitely don't want any F5s either. I do have a prediction: F0 season, Kevin Falcon will win again.
Oh, boy.
Okay, next question from random letters. I'm not going to try to pronounce it. JHDS, whatever. If you had to choose one, which is the better philosophy and why? Overvaluing vets or overvaluing prospects?
I'm going to go with overvaluing prospects because it's typically less expensive. And you can typically get rid of them easier.
I think you're correct.
Just because I like going against the grain on most of these, because yeah. I like good public debate. I like overvaluing vets because of how mad it makes everyone. I think that's a great philosophy to have. And if a vet is going to earn a tremendous amount of money, you know what it does is it actually makes you appreciate overvaluing prospects more. So in reality, my stuff is right too. So there you go.
There you go.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I think that if you're a team like Detroit, overvaluing prospects is more important. There is a case to be made for overvaluing vets if you are already a contender, but we're not, so screw the teams that are. Yep. Next up, we have Skillin Larkin, Zadina in 2020. Who asked a lot of the stuff we already answered. So I'm going to skip and pick and choose one of these. That's basically the biggest question I have is what would convince a prime defenseman to come to Detroit via free agency? And money is definitely the number one answer to that. there is a case to be made for the original six franchise being the cornerstone that brings Detroit back to glory. Obviously, your mileage may vary on that, but like the whole concept, like, oh, why would a guy want to sign with us, loser team and loser city and loserville? There's a lot of good reasons for it, and. Like, you know, why would Eric Carlson want to come to Detroit? I don't know. Daniel Alfredson really liked it here, and those two are really great friends. And there is that history of, Sweden-friendly, and, yes, money talks. And somehow Steve Yzerman has had a lot of good luck with getting guys to sign. Now, obviously, there's the no tax in Florida. It's a really nice place, blah, 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 blah. Whatever, shut up. But, yeah, I do believe that there are things that are maybe stacked against Detroit in terms of, you know, if a guy's got his choice of wherever he wants to go. But it's not a stupid consideration that a defenseman would actually come here.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's more difficult, or it's more a problem of there not being a lot of defensemen that fit that bill, and you're all fight, you know, a lot of teams are going to be fighting for the same small group of people that are really going to be able to come in and make a difference. I think that's probably more of a problem, I think.
Honestly, I'd like to see what teams have in their pitch books. You know, like what, because, like JJ said, yes, money, at the end of the day, the number of zeros attached to another number is going to heavily influence your decision. But, you know, I'm very interested to see what team pitches are, you know, especially in light of the whole Blake Griffin situation when he signed his, like, super deal with the Clippers and they invited him to Staples Center and there was already a banner, you know, Clipper for life. And I was thinking, like, you know, do other sports do that? Do they have, like, you know, some little pomp and circumstance? I know the only stuff I've ever heard with the Red Wings is when, like, the players are proposing to their girlfriends. Because, like Applicator was just like, hey, I need the Joe for a night. And he proposed to his girlfriend. Like, that's cool. That's some, like, neat pull-out-the-stop stuff to show that you're worth something and enable all that. But, you know, like we said, Pete, if the contract situations are changed either with what the fallout from what Matthews does or with what happens in the next CBA negotiation, I think that there's something to be said for Detroit specifically being in a mostly temperate climate. It's not always too cold. It's not always too hot. I think it's a actual model hockey city for reasons that we've obviously said forever and ever and ever. So they've already got that going for them. I think the big plus right now too is that we have a premier venue. You know, like, we're not – I can't tell you how many times that I've covered a game at the Joe, and media personnel and players are, like, unprompted. It's just like someone coughed, and they're like, you know, this place is a dump, right? So it's like, okay, we get it. But with this brand-new building now, I think that's another ace in the hole to go on here. But I would say – if Detroit is pitching somebody, I think history just as much as money are the things that'll woo somebody here. And, you know, Pete, with how recently we've talked about, you know, the whole discussion with Keith Gabe and Fedorov turning down the money and stuff. I'm curious as to what a Chris Illich pitch looks like right now, what a Ken Holland pitch looks like right now with where they're at. Of course, you can always deal with from a position of power because it's like, listen, I got the cups under the belt here. I'm running a pizza franchise that's taking the world by storm. You know, I'm offering you the golden key here, bud. Like, why are you saying no to me? Whereas now it's like you kind of have to be more appealing to not just the purse strings. I think Detroit has vastly improve their position in being able to get somebody here.
Yeah. All right, cool.
All right, we got two more questions, and I'm going to go out of order because the last one is a good rapid fire. But Tedaski wants to know, which story do you see as more inspirational, Probert or McCarty? I don't want to answer this one first. I want somebody else to do that.
Okay, I'll take this one first. I think when comparing it to two, that's I think head to head, it's burning out versus fading away, and I've always gone for the burning out. I think Probert's is a come from nothing, play the sport at the time of what, like the environment that he played in and the landscape of the league, just him and Ty Domi just beating each other into submission. I think his was as much of an inspirational story and a logical conclusion for what his life was like. I think the story's still being kind of written on McCarty, because if he hung it up after 2008, I say, yeah, McCarty's the way to go, but like, he's still struggling in some areas. So I personally see the Probert story as more inspirational, because he's been everywhere. He mostly saw everything, and he went out exactly as he did with the game. And I still miss him, though. And what's weird is he's a player card in NHL 19 right now, and that's way more than what McCarty can say right now. So I'm saying Probert.
Yeah, see, I think Probert is more tragic.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
is,
yeah,
I
mean, yes, it is. Yes,
you could draw
absolutely
inspiration
it's
from tragic.
Absolutely, it's tragic.
Yeah,
but yeah, I guess in head to head against McCarty, I just saw his as more. You know, it's he's obviously an icon, and Probert has Probert socks in the gift shop right now. McCarty does not. I got examples like this all up and down the street. Oh, this is not a good argument.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I'm having trouble with this one is the word inspirational. And I'm not meaning to criticize the person that wrote this. You know, just with the things that Probert struggled with, it kind of, I don't know, doesn't feel right to me to use that word. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. It's just,
yeah,
I don't know. Kind of makes me sad to think about, especially with all the, you know, the latest kind of round of news stories about, you know, brain damage and CTE, et cetera. And you know, the effect it can have on people. So, and again, by the way, if you're listening, I don't mean to criticize the commenter. I'm just saying that's the only reason I'm having trouble with it, because I'm not saying it's a bad question or anything.
All right. Moving on to the very last question. Hornecker wants us to say, what is the minimum return that you would accept in trade for each player who has an expiring contract? So I'll list the player, and you just fire off your answer. Let's just start with Martin Burke.
Anything we can get.
I would like, I want that to be a hockey trade. I want that to be someone comparable, just, you know, change of scenery. I want that to be a player for player.
I mean, I would honestly take future considerations. I don't know. I'm done with FERC, I guess. Nick Cronwall. Jay, you start us off with this one.
I would say, current Cronwall, I would be happy with, a pick and, a prospect, but I don't know, that's not the question. I'm not going to go, I want to trade Cronwall 10 years ago, and then we have the farm, right? We have this amazing defensive core because we offloaded Cronwall at the exactly right time. That's not the question. Currently, I would accept a good prospect and a pick for Cronwall.
Peter?
Third rounder. I don't think he's getting traded, but if you know, assuming he is.
Yeah, third rounder is exactly where I'm at, and that's basically because I would accept that he would accept that.
So, yeah.
Thomas Vanek, Pete?
Honestly, if we're going to trade him, I'd take anything we can get based on what happened last time trying to trade him and his defensive liability. I think, you know, I don't know, fourth, fifth rounder maybe, if we're going to trade him.
All right, Jay?
I think Ken Holland could work his magic again for like a third rounder. I think that could be done. He must have great phone voice, right? Just like, hey, hey, it's Ken. Hey, I just want to say I'm thinking about you. And that Vanek is freely available.
I would accept a fourth, but I would want conditions that could make it better. Can't give you more details than that because I haven't thought of them, but that's where I'm at. Nick Jensen, Jay.
I want meat with that. I want, if it's not a player, I want high picks. I think he's played himself into a tremendous amount of value on someone else's team, sadly not ours. So I want either a, you know, an up and coming, like right on the cusp, prospect, not somebody that we have to develop too much that we can just like insert cleanly, or some very valuable picks. Two of them. Two very valuable picks.
Peter?
I'll go with three first rounders because I don't want to trade them.
I'll say the return should be at least as good as what we got for Brendan Smith.
Cool.
Yeah. Now the real meaty guys. Jimmy Howard. Minimum
first
return, Peter.
It's so tough because it doesn't really seem like it's a seller's market, especially for goalies. I think I'd want a first by, I think I'd be okay with a second. I'd be fine with that.
I want first round. This is us getting rid of Howard means we are significantly buying into kind of spiraling a little bit. So if we're getting rid of one of the anchors that's kept us in this position in the first place, I want first rounds.
Yeah, I want a first round, and I also want a prospect because we're probably taking back a goalie that we don't want. So yeah, that's, and I'm guessing it's going to be from Calgary. Calgary's first rounder and prospect. I have no idea what their prospect pool looks like. Final one, Jay, what are you going to take for Gustav Nyquist at a minimum?
At a minimum. Oh, I want, at minimum, I want that to be a, just like with Jensen, I would want a very attractive pick plus a on the cusp, a winger prospect. Somebody that, you know, like I don't mind putting work into it, but I think he's worth a player. He's definitely worth somebody that's like, listen, like you're getting rid of Gus, we'll throw you somebody. He can do something, but. Obviously, it's the he can do something, but we'll just pad this offer out with you have a very nice pick. So, at minimum, player and very nice prospect. Very nice pick.
Peter?
I would say a minimum would be what we got for Tatar.
Ooh, at a minimum. Wow.
Yeah.
Tatar came with extra term. I would take less than what we got for Tatar, but not a lot. I want to say a first and a second, and then I think the second should have to be from like maybe a non-contender. So I don't know.
I'm down for that.
Cool.
All right, robot lady just gave me the warning. We're running out of time, so I'm gonna hand it back to Pete.
All right,
and you gotta get us out of here quick.
All right, so thank you very much for listening. For Jay and JJ, I am Peter. We are signing off for another episode, and we will be back to you soon. Have a great night.
Winging it.